there, and welcome to the Proud to Be a Rust and Glass podcast. Today's guest is Adrian Lime, former factory man who recently began teaching at TSA. Adrian is both a writer and an artist, and he does all of his work right here in the Toledo area. Thank you so much for making the mental space today after work to come see us and to sit with me. Right. I'm really looking forward to talking art and writing with you. Have you always lived in Toledo?
No. I grew up in Ashland, Ohio, kind of a north central Ohio town. Felt like a small town. Mm-hmm. It is, but not the minuscule town. It's kind of like 30,000, 40,000. I think it's larger now that I've been gone for, 30 plus years. But moved to Toledo to go to UT when I was 18 and then just never left.
Very cool. So did you do any type of creative or artistic work before you moved here? Or
yeah. So basically I've been writing poetry in whatever form. And when I was little, of course, it's what little kids do. You read Dr. Seuss. And I always had that drive to write. And I mean that in putting words on paper, not necessarily creative writing. I just like to type. Mm-hmm. I like to put things down. I think it was a way to get stuff out of my head and onto paper, something physical. And I was always a real emotional kind of kid. And like I would cry in a heartbeat and I kind of still do. Mm-hmm. But that was a way to vent things out. And there was no structure, no real education to it. My father was an English teacher. My mom was a newspaper editor and always around words. And so that was pretty important in our house anyhow. So it just kind of naturally came, but mostly as journal.
It was ingrained very early on. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So you moved here to go to school. Did you go to school for writing?
No. Well, yes and no. Yes. First, I was all sciences, hard sciences and math in high school. Okay. So I came to UT to go to engineering school and engineering physics for a couple years. At some point, I was still writing. Mm. I had to take a class in some liberal arts, anything, just to get that out of the way in the sciences. So I took Intro to Poetry because I loved poetry. I met a professor. She was fantastic. I would see her on office hours, and it just got me really revved up to write. So the longer I was in the sciences, and it was all theoretical at the near the end of my second year, and in one of the meetings with my professor, she said, "Why are you in engineering?" Which she wasn't trying to break me out of that, but she's asking because all I did was complain about how I don't like what I'm doing. And I went, I don't know. I don't know why. So I started thinking it through and took some real, and I was also paying my way through school, so there's a lot of work outside. What I really wanted to do was write. I didn't think it would make me any money. Right. I didn't think it could
there is
go
always
forward.
That.
Exactly. So I knew I was on a good track professionally, but I was miserable and it was very hard. So to do something hard that you love is maybe better, but something you can't stand and it's very hard. It just pushed me out of it. I switched my third year there's only an English degree at UT, but this was a composition focus, and immediately my life got better. Okay. I had to drop basically 2 years worth of credits because it was all the hard sciences, but it was worth it in the long run for my psyche, if nothing else.
It is sort of important that if you find yourself trying to shove yourself in a box that you're not meant to be in, I mean, at least 2 years is better than 30.
Right. And at that point, I was talking to TAs who were in lab classes with me, and I was asking what they do when they're in an engineering environment, and the things they were describing was not what I was thinking. Like, I'm out there, I'm going to build airplanes. Like, oh, no, you're going to test metals in your lab area. Right. That's all you're going to do or whatever, and write reports. You better like writing reports. And like, boy, those are all the things I want to be out there. Like, you should have been in the tech side, like in the, get your hands dirty kind of thing. So that was always with me. But no, I was just kind of swinging hard for something that I didn't quite know what I was doing until I got up into the little higher level and went, yeah, I'm in the wrong course of study.
I enjoy writing, but report writing,
That was something else. A trip when I was in engineering school, we did technical report writing class, and it makes sense, but stripped, just devoid of anything creative. And that's how it's designed. It's just super clarity and nothing else.
Yeah, here's the language we want you to use. Yeah. Here's how we want you to use
it. It has to be that way. Yeah. And that makes sense. It's standard all over the world that way.
Oh, yeah.
But it drained me. It was so hard not to say, this is so boring. Like, it's meant to be boring. It's supposed to be boring.
You did find yourself in a job, though, that did have some tie back to those roots, right? I mean, you were in a factory doing any kind of work, but your work before you left was very much in that line, wasn't it?
I've been all over the place. I have done a lot of manual labor when I was especially younger. I was a lifeguard for years. I thought maybe I'm going to go into recreational science, all this. That wasn't going to happen, but it was great at the time. So then I started doing, I worked at COSI, predecessor of the Imagination Station. I worked there for 7 years. That was fantastic. It mixed art and science, so that felt really good to me. I was able to do writing. It wasn't creative writing, but signage and things, trying to think how kids think, and try to say really high-end things in really simple ways. Mm-hmm. It's what poetry is.
Mm-hmm. And get the kids inspired into the sciences.
We were teaching electrical theory to like 10-year-olds, it was just you have to do it in a way that makes sense to them. Mm. And the idea wasn't to teach it really, but to give them context so that when they learn it later, they go, oh, it's like that time at COSI. Mm. So that was great for me. But then when that shut down during the recession, I kind of floated for a while. I was doing videography, which is something I had done to help me get through school, a college. And then I had the opportunity to work at Jeep, which I did not want to go back. I was 40. I didn't want to go back into manual labor, but there it was. And here's a great job, which I took up. And I thought it was going to be miserable, and it was rough, but it gave me a lot of time to think. And the more exhausted, this sounds counterintuitive, but the more exhausted my body got, the better my brain was firing off ideas and things. There was nothing else to think about. So I got to think all day, all night long at that time, which ended up getting my writing going again.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. That's absolutely amazing. And now you're in another transition period.
Yeah.
You left the factory days behind. We were just talking. You are now subbing at TSA. You found a more long-term thing there as well.
For sure.
How has that transition been for you?
It's been great. It feels very, very natural, but it is a culture shock. I was 12 years at Jeep, and then to come into this environment, it's super supportive. It's a great school. The kids are fantastic, but it was a bit of a culture shock. But it did feel natural. So every step along the way, there are people helping me out. I'm doing a long-term subbing gig for a teacher who was an eighth grade history teacher, American history teacher. Okay. Not that I don't remember some of these things from when I was young, but I'm refreshing myself and I'm learning a lot as I'm doing this. So it's been
really
pretty
great. Sounds like an amazing opportunity. Mm-hmm. How has your art and your writing sort of changed as you've gone through these different transitions?
I don't know if this is normal for everyone, but I suspect it is. Everything changes when I'm working at the factory. I'm writing factory poems. Mm-hmm. I do write love poems, but there's always steel in it, or there's always busted knuckles or something. And now it just kind of changes your perspective. So I'm writing essentially the same themes, but from a different direction.
Okay.
And so I'm so new to this. This is just the first year I've been subbing that I have not found that groove yet in my writing. And it keeps coming out because I keep writing more, but it doesn't know where it's going. So what I'm excited about is each time I do this big transition in my life, I come out with a good amount of material that I did not expect out of me.
Right.
It just shifts my perspective.
It's
fantastic.
It's really hard when you have something in your life that is taking up such a big portion of it. Mm. I mean, maybe not as many hours now as when you were working at Jeep, but still a lot of hours of your life. It's almost impossible to keep that separated from your creativity. And it's interesting to see the ways that it comes out once you sort of fall into, you know, your routines and you fall into to that new norm.
It is. It's weird because there's this transition period. We were just talking earlier about you get a day off in a week. So that's your time. If you're going to write, that's the best time to write. But for me, it is also, I have to be able to be, I used to say I can't write a poem about the house being on fire while the house is still on fire. I need time to process and think about it, and then it'll come out when it's ready.
Some space and reflection.
For sure. So changing jobs, now I get off of school, and I'm still thinking about school. Mm-hmm. I'm still thinking about, I got to get these grades done. I got to get set up for tomorrow. I'm not thinking creatively, and that, so there's this period of sort of coming down and then getting your head clear, and then I can start engaging things, which is still, it's kind of up in the air right now. I am writing, and I'm in a group now again, critique group we call it, but really it's just friends who are writers putting stuff together, sharing it, and then talking about it. So it's inspiring.
Are these people that you've written with and worked with before?
For sure. Well, one is my wife.
Oh, very cool.
So Johnny McIntyre, the poet laureate of Lucas County.
That kind of helps force you to be a writer if you're a writer, if you're married to the poet laureate. Right,
right. And we do this anyway in our house, you know, just share. If we're caught up on something, I'm not quite sure how this resolves. Seems right, but there's something wonky here. Can you take a look at it? She's very good at that. Mm-hmm. A great, great friend of ours who lives in Findlay, and then a few teachers from TSA also. So we meet at TSA twice monthly.
Oh, that's amazing.
Share some stuff and just give ideas, and it peps you up. Even sometimes when I'm going to go to the group, that something pops. Mm-hmm. I get it now. I don't even need the critique. I need the direction.
Right. You need to be forced into that mind space sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I led the first time ever leading a workshop last a couple weeks ago, and it was an experience that also opened up my writer's brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really amazing when you go in just to sit with other writers or sit with other creatives, the influence that has on your own stuff, even, like you said, even before you're even around them.
For sure. Well, and what you said, the creatives, I find that's absolutely true. Musicians, painters, any of these arts, it doesn't have to be a writer. In fact, I think sometimes writers can be, it's almost competitive. I don't know if that's right or not, but just the idea of opening up, you said your writer's brain, there is a separate, it just seems like there's a separate thing. You have to click out of one to get to the other. I don't know if that's true, but it feels that way.
I think it is. If I ever get caught in that mind space at home, I know my wife's always a little agitated. She's like, you got to do these real life things. You got to come back to earth for a little bit. It's like, sorry.
Yeah. No, when you get it creative and open, it's just how that goes. But you still, I don't know. I have a million alarms on my phone so that I don't spend the entire day doing the thing that really is driving me.
It's like, come back to the real world, Adrian.
Yeah. Every once in a while, dip your toe in there at least.
I love it. So you write and you also do some art.
Mm-hmm.
What type of stuff do you find yourself writing about?
So I don't know when this happened, but I write love poems. I don't write, that's not my major theme really, but I find that as I'm writing about something I really love, it turns into a love poem, and not necessarily to a person, but whatever it is, it's a love poem to work, or it's a love poem to someone. I'm not sure how that works, but it kind of naturally pops out of me that way. I think the other part is elevating, well, no, it's not elevating. I was corrected on this one time. I was going to say elevating like blue collar work or lifestyle or something like that, but I was reminded you're not elevating it. It's already elevated. You're just shining a light on the fact that it is elevated.
I love the way you put that, yeah.
It's easy to slip into that thing to think that blue collar work is lesser than whatever, and it's just not true. And I think it took some time being in it where this is all my life was, not all my life was, all my professional life was before I started recognizing that. Right. This is not lesser work, and there's no such thing as unskilled labor. This is all skilled labor. It's just in a different vein. It's not necessarily what you study, but what you train at.
It's a buzzword that people use to pay people less.
And even while you're in the factory, you can think of yourself that way.
Right.
But that way you undersell yourself, you will take less than you're worth because you think, well, I'm not worth that much. Like, yes we are.
Right.
Yes,
that's one of the things I love. We've had several other quote unquote blue collar writers on this show before, and the fact that you are able to shine that light on it and shine the light on the beauty that is some of that work that others might consider, lesser or menial or whatever. And she's like, no, it's not. This is our life. This is amazing.
Right.
This is things that keep this country going and keep the economy going. And
I think it's like a machine or a car, and maybe there are parts of your car that you don't really need, but if you take out your muffler, you take out your, I don't know, there's no carburetor anymore, you take out your radiator, the car doesn't work. It doesn't matter that it's not the most important part.
Right.
It's an important part because it's part of the whole.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. How is your art different from your writing?
So It's unusual because I got into this when I was in college. I'm not sure how it happened. I had a Rolling Stone magazine. I took a picture of Bob Marley. It's a great photo, and it's kind of a classic photo. And I took all the parts that were black, his hair and his bits of his eyes and his mouth, all the parts that were black, and I cut them out and put that on the wall, and I spray painted it and took it off. It was just like a stencil, right?
Okay.
It was really weird, but I liked it. So I started doing that more, and at some point I got better at it, and I started adding shades and stuff. So I don't do freehand spray paint art, but most of what I do are spray paint works, and they're mostly portraits.
Okay.
At some point, I started using the computer to design what I want to paint before I painted it, and then that kind of just took a life of its own, and now that's basically what I do is spray paint portraiture.
Oh, very cool. And that's something that has also evolved, I'm sure, as you've grown as a person, as things in your life has changed. How have those works sort of taken on a life of their own as you've become who you are today?
I think something sort of fundamentally changed as I did them more and more. You can see, like, I keep all my images in the last few years on Instagram, and that's what I use it for. And you can see from the first ones I posted until recent ones, this learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see it, and I can remember when I got to this one and this one of Neil deGrasse Tyson. And it's like, I can't believe the detail in this.
Right.
And now I look back and I go, oh man, I could do that in 30 minutes. It's nothing. But I think it just developed. The more I did it, the more I was avoiding mistakes and pitfalls. And the best thing about it for me, and it's kind of how it's related to writing or any other creative thing, when I get going on it, I am outside of time.
Right.
I'm focused. It's very deliberate work, very tiny cuts with an X-Acto knife thousands and thousands and thousands of times. I put masking tape on my canvas, and that's how, and then I build that up as I go layer by layer. So, I mean, there are literally maybe 10 or 20,000 cuts that go onto each painting. It'll take me 50, 60 hours of work to produce it, and that's after I've done it on the computer, like planned it on the computer. Mm-hmm. But it's contemplative. It gets me into this zone where I'm listening to music and just following lines for hours and hours. Okay. It's almost like a Zen tangle kind of thing, okay. But I've made it myself. And then I end up with a painting at the end.
Very cool. So. Are you able to do writing work and art at the same time? Or do you, when you start on a portrait, does it pretty much consume your creative space?
That's what I tend to do. When I get onto a painting, I obsess. It's all I can mm-hmm. think about. But I don't want to paint if I don't enjoy doing it.
Right.
Unless it's a commission or something, which is fair. That's, if you take the job, you got to do the job. Right. When I'm on that scent, I'm usually pretty committed to it, and I get done. All I want to do is peel the tape off before it's dry, and you just have to hold back. But every once in a while, it'll get to be tedious, because it is fairly tedious work, but I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. At some point, if it gets to be slow and I don't like it anymore, I just stop. End of story. But I still got that creative juice going, and sliding into writing, kind of like, it's like getting a rub down after a workout. Like, on that, settled things. I needed to move. Now I've moved, and it's a different part of my brain, but it's the juice is going. That creative juice is going.
Oh, very cool. That's really cool that you can work one off of the other and keep it moving. Are there any things that you have struggled with as a creative person?
Oh, yeah.
Mental health things?
For sure.
Or, just aspects of the work that have been hard? Or?
I think I've struggled with anxiety and depression. A lot of people have since I was a little kid. And this is, I think, also, as I said before, part of the reason I like to get things out, put them on paper. It's physical. It's mm-hmm. not still in me. It is, but it gives you something to focus on. So that's always been that way. The difficulty I'll get in recent decades is not just saying the thing, but finding a way to hand that to the reader. I know what I want to say. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in that bad space in my head, which happens, it's you're just saying it and you're not being clear. They don't know what you're feeling. But you can do it with metaphor. You can do it with literary devices. You can bring people with you.
Right.
But when you just blast it out, which feels good at the time, it's like shouting. Well, people know what that feeling is, but they don't know what you're saying.
Right.
So you need to find the key that unlocks what their experience is that can bring them with you. That's the part that I struggle with sometimes when I'm things are in a spin. My life is I'm transitioning now from Jeep to TSA, which is a great move, but it can muddy the waters in my head. So I don't know quite how to say the things that I'm trying to say.
Right.
But this is working out now that I've been there for a while and it's kind of settling. So yeah, now I can kind of clear the waters a little bit.
And you can kind of recognize when this might actually connect with people.
Oh yeah,
it's not just not me at this point. It's it's something that the people listening or the people reading will connect to.
Somebody had asked me, it's a weird but fantastic question. They just were reading a book of mine and said, how do you write a poem like that? I went, I don't know. I don't know how. You just kind of do it, I think. But I mean, so I don't know how you define that. How do you say, how do you write a poem? No idea. Not the first idea. I can study it, but I don't think there's a real answer. It's not science.
Right.
It's kind of magic.
You write a bunch of really, really bad poems. Mm-hmm. And you figure out who you are as a poet and as a writer, and you figure out this is how my work needs to come out on the page in order for other people to connect with it. And you learn along, you learn as you go. And I don't know if you've had one of those aha moments, but eventually if you do it enough and you love it enough, you figure it out.
I think that it's exactly that. I think the more you write, the more you recognize what you think was very clear and nobody else understands it. Mm-hmm. That's not their fault. It's not your fault, really, but that poem might just be for you. That's not for consumption, which is fine. And in fact, that's great. It's healthy. Just the act of writing at all is introspective. So it's a creative act. It's good for you. But if what you want to do also is share that, I do think that art is a conversation, a painting that you paint and finish, and it was good for you, and you put it in the closet, no one sees it. You have not finished that conversation.
Right.
I think the sharing and then you're essentially giving it to an audience. When they get it, they get to think what they think about it. Mm-hmm. It's no longer yours. I mean, you can have copyright on it, but it's no longer your poem. Right. It's their poem. I love that because it is conversation, maybe not conversation. It is communication mm-hmm. with somebody who you've never met. across the country or world. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful and practical way to look at, you know, shared art. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Do you feel like you'd like to share some of your work with us today?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to.
Amazing. We'd love to hear some poetry or whatever you've got in your back pocket, and we'll share it with the world.
Okay. You want to do that right now?
Sure.
All right. I brought two poems, and as I had said before, I write love poems. Okay. And they tend to be like, is that a love poem? And you go, oh, yeah, it really kind of is. So here, this one is called Silent Treatment. It goes like this. It's been unusually quiet in our house for 2 full days. And because I can't remember if we are still in argument, I go to apologize to my wife. I don't know what for. I recall something about shoelaces or perhaps boots. All I know is that we, both writers, feed on each other's words. Now there are none, and I am starving. But because I can't remember who thinks they won, or which word one of us felt slighted by, or what offending look, I'm afraid my not knowing will seem worse than this silence. I walk into her office room, and she is tapping away on her computer. She sees me standing silent and says, "Are we still arguing? I can't remember why, but I don't like this." And 25 years of our life together flashes back to me, all the trials and tragedies and ecstasies, the tired longings and great victories. What can I do then but laugh? It was, of course, never about shoelaces or boots. I say, I can't remember either. And although I feel foolish, we talk and talk and talk, and we fill each other back up.
Well, I love that. The line about we're both writers and we feed off each other's words and you're starving. That was beautiful. Yeah.
It's that loud silence.
Yes. And I think anybody in a long-term relationship has had times like that where it's just like everything just feels a little heavier and a little just uncomfortable in the house. And sometimes you just got to put it out there like, what are we doing?
Everything feels wrong because there's this discord. But really then talking and owning it is the way to come back out of that.
Yeah. Saying it might have been you, it might have been me. It doesn't matter at this point.
We can't. And it's usually never the thing that you're saying it is. Mm-hmm. It's not the dishes. That's not why you're arguing.
No. But. Absolutely not. I love it. And he's got another one for us. What's that? What's this one?
Well, this one came because I am historically terrible at getting a prompt. It's that the you know, writing about a house on fire while it's on fire. You give me a prompt, I need to think about that, sometimes days or weeks. But I was committed to doing this prompt from a friend. It's about, it was a raven and you pull the feathers off and on the back of the feather it has a prompt. So we were doing this type-in thing with typewriters, and I love a typewriter. It makes me feel like I'm doing something even if I'm just writing my name. So it comes from that. This is called How a Poem is Like a Seed. The prompt is to write a poem about sleep, but all you can imagine is a raven's feather resting upon a snowdrift. But this helps to remind you of a time at the beach when you were very small, how sand scratched your eye and your mother held you, wrapped up in a beach towel until your tears made you feel better. The beach towel was soft, like your mother, and white, like a snowdrift, upon which the raven's feather rested. Then your memory drifts from snow to fire, how you camped in all of these northern state winters, and morning coals were like a miracle, fingers flexing near this new warmth stoked from cold. And snow still fell, and from a nearby branch, a raven watched you shimmy your foolishness, and your young body was still waking from this cold night's sleep. And you realized then that, yes, now you are writing a poem about sleep. So the prompt seemed to work. Only now you also want to write a poem about your mother, her softness and her hardness. And somehow you also want to write a poem about beach towels and all that endless sand. But it bothers you that you only imagine the raven's feather and not the raven. And why not? What happened to the raven? And why don't you care? So your next poem, you decide, will be about a raven. Or at the very least, a raven's feather resting upon a snowdrift. Which brings you back to your original thought. And who knows just what might grow from that.
And was there ever a poem about a raven?
No, just this one. But what it got to me was sort of like we're saying, you get on a roll. Mm-hmm. I was not in a creative place. We started doing this thing. I got a prompt. I kept writing things. I go, why am I thinking about a raven? Like, what? Because of the raven, we pulled the prompt from. I'm not thinking about what the prompt says. Right. And after a while, I got a poem out of it, and I'm like, yeah, but now I'm on to this other thing too. So it's once you get on that roll, it really helps. So there's the thing: if you want to write a poem, you sit down and write the poem. Right. You can't edit if there's nothing to nothing to edit.
I love it. And that's why I always kind of laugh when people say, "What do you do when you don't have any ideas?" I'm like, that's not really a problem if you are really into this kind of thing. Like, there's always going to be something to at you.
You can look around in the room. You'll find something, anything. And then you think of it, well, what if that weren't there? Or what does that mean? Like, what does a curtain mean? It doesn't mean anything, but it could mean everything. It'll start you on a track. And then that's the role. Then you take the role and you keep going.
Very cool. So now that you've kind of transitioned, you're sort of falling into your new life and the new Adrian, do you have anything on the horizon that you're kind of excited about that's got you really jazzed up about your creativity?
Yeah, for sure. There's a thing. So I tend to write narrative, as you heard, but I love little teeny tiny poems, haiku and so forth. I don't really write them, but I started writing down these things. I call them little aphorisms. And at one point, because of a 10 to 20 word tiny little poems.
Oh, cool.
And I was just trying to get like I love the Imagist poetry, William Carlos Williams and so forth. And even though he's super wordy when he does these big pieces, he writes these tiny little poems. And there's something gorgeous about that. Pinpointing something small, it can mean something big, but there's very, very few words. So I try to do that and almost as an exercise. And after a while, I liked it and I just kept doing it. So I ended up with hundreds and hundreds of these tiny little things. Some of them are fine and some of them are excellent. And some of them are just a lark, you know, something funny, I thought. That's it. And I did that for a while, maybe three, four years. And then another poet who I had met a few times in Missouri, a great guy named Victor, he posted, I think on one of the social media things, he posted some of these things. They were just like what I was doing. So I called up and I said, do you want to do a collaboration? So we've been doing that for a couple of years now. It's stagnated, but we're now kind of stirring it back up. So sometime in the near future, in the next year or so, I think we're going to have a volume come out.
That's very cool.
And he's as prolific. He's more so than I am. So we've got hundreds and hundreds. Now the thing is, do we let them all out there or do we whittle it down to
And if you do whittle it down, how do you pick them?
Exactly. I have no idea.
I'm from Missouri, actually. I'm from Columbia, Missouri.
Oh,
but I have found a weird and amazing and talented and just wacky pocket of writers and incredibly talented artists from Missouri.
For sure.
And it sounds like you found it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. John Dorsey formerly of Toledo, lives out there. So we visit every so often. And there's just a huge community of really challenging writers. They do things that you don't see very often. I love it. Yeah.
I love your. So you said that your art can be found on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Just searching your name, Adrian Lime, on Instagram.
Yeah, so it's like A Lime 42 and 42, the answer to life, the universe, and everything. So A Lime 42, and that's my Gmail thing.
Anywhere else people can follow along with some of the stuff you're doing?
Not in particular. Okay. So I kind of go along with the stuff that Johnny does. She sets up all these events and things. Mm-hmm. So you can find me around Toledo, pretty much anything that's going on. Amazing. I'm going to try to get there. But no, not so much. I'm pretty solitaire in my writing.
Oh, I love it. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, a lot of people like to write with others and for others, but also for themselves. And a lot of people like to commercialize it. And
oh, actually, you know, I should say, I'm sorry, I don't have the social media thing. I do have two books out, though.
Oh, cool.
One was a split chat book with Michael Grover, who is now living in Florida, but he was in Toledo when we were writing this. It's called Feeding the Monster, real small chat book. And then Every Broken Little Thing is my full-length collection, and that's that came out of a Missouri publisher also.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Somehow always comes back to Missouri for me. I don't know how, but I...
Midwest, the I-70 corridor.
Oh,
it's like
a
whole lot of artists.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Well, again, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Sometimes, especially after a long day, it's tough to open up about stuff, but I appreciate your willingness to do so.
I love it.
This was a great conversation.
Thanks.
This has been today's episode of Proud to Be of Rust and Glass. Adrian Lime shows us that sometimes the transitions in our lives, though challenging, can provide us with invaluable insights into our own creative processes. Change is inevitable, but it doesn't have to slow down your art. Again, I am your host and producer, Curtis Dieter. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. If you want to join the conversation, check us out at wgte.org/rustandglass. Until next time, thanks for listening. Now, go forth and create.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.